What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is the top of the week, which means it's time for some strange news. Fellow conspiracy realist, we are going to learn some disturbing things in Sierra Leone. We're going to learn some crazy stuff in South Korea. We're going to have a follow-up to the Norfolk Southern East Palestine episode. We're going to talk about some worrying stuff with zoonotic infections and bugs. Maybe we'll get to a heist, but before we do any of that, have you ever gone by a different name, fellas?
Ben.
No comment. If not so much. I do like with this with our little virtual recordings, we get to give ourselves fun nicknames every time we log in. So that usually is a fun thing to do. But I'm not really much of a giving myself a nickname kind of guy. It seems like something other people are supposed to do. Not the same, however, as stealing someone's identity. That's very, very different. And also, you know, when we think of identity theft, oftentimes we're so inundated these days with, like, you know, LifeLock and all of these ways of protecting yourself and, you know, getting alerts when our passwords have appeared in leaked data breach kind of situations. And almost to the point where it's like, okay, it's just another thing. It's par for the course. And if you're doing your stuff right, 9 times out of 10, you've got two-factor authentication on an account or whatever it might be. And you're probably going to, even if someone does steal your data or steal your credit card or whatever it might be, it's going to be mildly inconvenient. Convenient at best, right? I mean, there's certainly escalated versions of that. But overall, sure. I'm not really worried about having my life turned upside down by somebody swiping my credit card digits, you know, using like a skimmer or something like that. It's just
knock
probably going to...
Yeah. Well, dude, I just had an experience with a potential skimmer at a gas station. It was not fun. But what I would say is, I think the thing people are most afraid of is that whole, like, I'm going to have to contact my bank. Somebody took a lot of money out of my bank or my, you know, used a lot of money in a credit card that I have that I haven't looked at in a while. And now I've got to deal with this.
Right.
But it is a sliding scale that goes pretty deep, right?
Absolutely.
There are protections in, you know, like, again, as we always say with these stories, the natural default state of your credit should be frozen. You should unfreeze it when you have to do the big things, because it can be a huge hassle. The onus is on the consumer. But to your point, Noel, a lot of times when we are talking about the idea of identity theft, then it's something like a skimmer, or it's something like someone has used a credit card or stolen
that that information, and often credit companies have protections for you as the actual holder of the card. But this
for sure
is only the beginning.
It's only the beginning, and you know the FDIC, you know, insures your bank deposits up to a certain amount and all of that good stuff. I'm not trying to dismiss any of those occurrences as being not worth worrying about. Like, to your point, Ben, you should absolutely worry about it, if anything, more now than ever. But don't let it ruin your life. I think that's the whole point in terms of like ruin it with worry. Let's talk about how it could actually ruin your life. And I don't want this to be a fear-mongering kind of situation where people are like afraid to live life for fear of having something like this happen to them. This is obviously an outlier and just a perfect storm of awfulness for one William Donald Woods, who it all started back in 1988 when he was working at a hot dog stand with a guy named Matthew David Kearns. Recently, last week, Kearns pleaded guilty to identity theft, admitting to having used Woods' name, identity, social security number in almost every single aspect of his life for decades. So essentially, Kearns, who is now 58, used Woods' identity to obtain insurance, to obtain a social security number, a birth certificate, driver's licenses, credit, various jobs, bank accounts, all of this stuff. Apparently, he even had a child while using Wood's name. All of this dating back to that fateful hot dog stand, co-working situation in 1988. And this is, I believe it started back in Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa, is where the kind of primary reporting on this comes from. So essentially what happened was, at a certain point in 1990, 2 years after they met at the hot dog stand, Kearns got a fraudulent Colorado ID with Woods' name and date of birth on it. And he continued doing this for a couple of years. At the time, Kearns lived as Woods in various states. And Woods, completely ignorant of this, went on living his life. Kearns racked up just tens of thousands of dollars in debt under Woods' name, again, unbeknownst to Woods. And then in August of 2019, Woods, who was living unhoused in Los Angeles, and guys, I'm so sorry, if ever I have mixed up these two guys' names, you can see how that could be easy to do.
It happens.
Kearns is the one perpetrating the fraud. Woods is the victim of the fraud. Woods is living unhoused in Los Angeles at this point in 2019. He goes to a bank. He realizes something is amiss. We don't really know the story of Woods up to this point, but one could imagine that having been a victim of this identity theft up to this point, while maybe things weren't going well for him in other ways, you have to wonder if some of that stuff couldn't have been what maybe led him to being unhoused. But he gets wind of something being amiss, whether he had sought help prior to this, we don't know. But in 2019, he goes into a bank of a national chain of a bank, which is not named in the lawsuit. This is where a lot of this reporting is coming from as well. He says that he believes that someone has been using his social security number to obtain, you know, credit, and has racked up over $130,000 of a debt in his name. And he says this to the bank teller, who then asks him to answer some security questions, you know, which we know are great if you're the one who made them and you're the only one who can answer them. Doesn't work quite so well when the person perpetrating the fraud on you is the one who made them. So when he couldn't answer them, they called the owner of the account, you know, who the account belonging to the person they believe is, in fact, William Donald Woods, who answers the phone. This, of course, is Matthew David Kearns, the perpetrator of the fraud, who successfully answers the security questions and then says, I'm not sure who would be trying to access my accounts in Los Angeles. Whoever that person is trying to commit a fraud on me, trying to perpetrate a crime on me. You gotta, you know, send that person to the brig. And so what happens, basically, starting at this point, is this Woods is arrested and essentially goes through the justice system in such a way that he ultimately ends up being institutionalized. He is institutionalized because he is all the while, as you would, claiming that someone is stealing his identity and has been stealing identity, that he is, in fact, the real Mr. Woods. And he doesn't know who this other person is. And, you know, that's, I mean, talk about, what would you guys call that? Being gaslit? Like when they don't even know they're doing it. But I mean, it's, yeah. I don't know. It's
institutionally gaslighting, perhaps.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this thing that happens sometimes where, unfortunately, there have been cases where people have been declared legally dead and are very much alive, and they have to try to prove that they are alive. And I mean, we have to exercise some empathy for just how frustrating this must be, Noel. You're saying, I can't answer these questions because I'm the me, but I didn't make the questions.
How am I not myself? It reminds me of that thing in, I believe it was, I Heart Huckabees, where there's Jason Schwartzman's character that keeps repeating, how am I not myself? I would feel like I was losing my mind, not to mention things have been going poorly up to this point, it would seem. Matt, what do you think?
Well, I think this is an impossible situation to go through. Imagine all of the legal and careful steps you would have to go through to prove your identity to someone. And if that, or in some institution, and that institution makes the decision, oh no, you're not actually the person that you say you are.
Based on this criteria, this is our gold standard. You have failed the test. Therefore, you are not you, and you are persona non grata at this point.
Well, yeah, but then imagine that they say, oh, well, actually, the thing that you were doing and saying, the person that you say you are, is actually a major crime, and we need to incarcerate you for that. Mm-hmm. And then you continue to say that. And did we get to the point where they put him in a mental health facility?
Well, I said it led to that. He was incarcerated for a year, roughly more than a year, actually. And then through various occurrences, likely related to him refusing to just give up, he spent nearly 150 days in a psychiatric institution, and I believe was even medicated. You know, yes. I mean, this is like, that's
psychotropic
horrific
medication.
Oh my God, dude. Can you imagine? This is like, I mean, they're going to make a movie out of this. This is like, you know, an absolute hellish experience from the perspective of the dude who's just on a mission to get his life back, but doesn't even know who did this to him. It's like Old Boy level maliciousness.
In a way, it reminds me of, what was that film? I think the actor was Angelina Jolie, The Changeling or something, where she knew the kid was not her own, but society did not believe her. And she was also, I think, ultimately institutionalized. It's tough when you go against any bureaucracy, right? And you know, if we walk through the mechanisms of proving one's actual identity, then we do see there's this sort of feedback loop or snowball effect that occurs when someone has perpetrated this kind of fraud over time. Because every single time you successfully steal an identity or take one that is not yours, every single time you get a little more support for the next time you try something like that, right? That's so, like, from the days of the hot dog stand, fast forward a few years, and now this person who has stolen the identity can easily appear to back up all of their claims. It's insidious. It's tough, man. And hopefully, is there a happy ending here, Noel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, please, Matt, real quick.
Well, I just wonder how you go through all this stuff and you can't prove you are who you say you are with documentation. Isn't it possible nowadays to, like, take a sample from somebody and prove?
Well, that's where it goes. But yeah, that's where we're getting there. That is ultimately what was able to kind of, you know, be the aha moment in this. So I really do feel like in many ways this is there's a lot of ins and outs here, and it relates to a lot of the kinds of things we talk about. Could well be worth an episode on its own. But you know, Kieran's is institutionalized all the while. His own counsel in the trial for when he's arrested, and a lot of this stuff is what happens in the interim before he goes on trial for identity theft of this other guy, who he doesn't even know who he is at this point. He does at a certain point, once the charges are filed, he now knows who he's up against, right? Because he knows whoever's on the other end of that phone, that's his evergreen. If you guys have seen Old Boy, you know, again, sorry, I keep referencing that, but it is just such a perfect nemesis example of someone just absolutely screwing you over who you can't see, you don't have access to, you can't ask them, why did you do this to me? And in Old Boy, there's a reason. The reason here is that this guy is basically a sociopath. He just did it because it was easy. And all we know is that he continued to do it almost because it was just, well, I'm already doing it. You know, might as well just keep the grift going. We really don't know.
Do we know whether the thief maintained their previous identity?
That we don't know. Again, a lot of this stuff is very new information, and I'm really looking forward to getting more details, you know, trickling out as things progress. It is not clear from anything that I have read why this guy did this in the first place. Like, it just seems like it was like one of those, what is it, the banality of evil kind of scenarios where it's like, why did you do it? Why did you do this to me? It's because I could. And because
profit.
Yeah.
He made money, right? He stole, $130,000?
That's true. But that's also $130,000 in he's maintaining this identity. So that debt is on him. He's not just trundling that debt off to somebody else and then disappearing into the shadows. He's living as this person. So presumably that debt is also is kind of on him, even though this other guy is being affected by it. Because it appears that Kieran's, you know, who perpetrated the fraud, was a pretty successful data analyst, at least, you know, as of the time of when he was caught. So essentially what happened is in March 2021, Woods is convicted, pleading no contest, meaning that he basically acknowledges the dire nature of a situation, but refuses to admit that he did anything wrong. And in May, later that year, the court ordered Woods to not to even use his real name anymore. Then several months later, Woods contacted police in Heartland, Wisconsin, which is where Kieran's was living at the time. And Kieran's found out and wrote to an LAPD detective saying that he felt that this individual who had contacted his employers and was convicted of stealing his ID was trying to like stalk him or something. So he's once again like doubling down on the gaslighting, and he's concerned that he's going to alter his bank accounts, knows where he lives.
Wait, so this is the bad guy reaching out saying the real person is harassing me?
Yeah, because he won. He won the court case. The perpetrator won the court case, and the other guy had to give up ever using that name again. It was basically granted for all intents and purposes to Kieran's. But Woods kept fighting, even after the police didn't do anything about it, because fake Woods, aka Kieran's, was able to give them just enough information to get them to back off. Woods continued, as you would have to, or just, I don't know, and end your life, man. I mean, I don't know how I would handle this. If I just felt constantly like I was beating my head against a wall, I think you could fall into despair very, very easily. You know, I can't imagine. So this guy really had some real perseverance. He continues. He files a second identity theft complaint in September of 2021. Kieran's then responds, calling Woods Matthew Kieran's, and saying that his identity is still being threatened. So at this point, in January of 2023, Woods, the real Woods, the victim here, reaches out to Kieran's employer again, saying, your employee is using my identity and has been a perpetrator of this for many years, and I need to look into it. For whatever reason, this time, there is an internal investigation launched. Kieran's then continues to double down on his story.
It's really interesting here that the University of Iowa, you know, has its own police force. I didn't know that police force for a university would have detectives working for them. That's fascinating. It's always something that I assumed would go to a different jurisdiction, right? Like a state police or a local, I guess it is a local police force.
You know, I think you're right, Matt. Just to clarify, I believe there was an internal investigation launched, and then the Iowa police were involved, and it was assigned a detective to help, you know, kind of look into this potential identity theft.
But that detective is the one that actually made headways with
this,
right?
That's exactly right. So the detective then is able to actually match Woods' DNA, the real Woods' DNA, with his father's living in Kentucky, thanks to, you know, I mean, again, we've got all kinds of issues with these 23andMe things and these DNA databases, but here's an example of where it was actually, you know, a positive. So that match takes place. And what would have happened if Woods' father had not been living? probably would have been another brick wall. And I don't know if the investigation would have been able to continue. So the Iowa detective then reaches out and asks Kearns what his father's name was. Uh-oh. Right? Finally, he's being asked a question that he doesn't have the answer to. At which point, the detective does the big reveal, showing him the DNA evidence, to which Kearns responds, "My life is over."
Yeah, after sending a dude to jail for over 400-and-something days and then a psychiatric facility for another 100-and-something days. Yeah, your life is over, pal.
He's got another quote just saying, "Everything is gone." This guy just seems like a... This is the kind of stuff that, to me, is just tantamount to the sort of urges that drive serial killers. Or, you know, I said this the other day, actually, when we were talking about the fertility fraud, the kind of urge that would drive a doctor to impregnate a woman with their own genetic material, or just, you know, perpetrate some sort of fraud around people that are in the most vulnerable stage of a marriage or a relationship, desperately wanting to have kids. I think I said something like that's the kind of urge that seems to me very akin to what drives serial killers. Same thing here. This guy, absolute monster. And I really look forward to hearing more about this. I think it is something that, as more information comes out, maybe we sit on it a while. It could well be a full episode, and can't wait for the mini series. This is just too much. It almost sounds stranger than fiction. You guys have anything else to add? I think that's about all for me.
Yeah, we just have to change the ending. It needs to be a Quentin Tarantino movie, and it needs to have like that Kill Bill revenge thing, like at the end. Just rewrite the ending to where the real Woods gets a nice little revenge.
Do we know the real identity of the detective? Never mind.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
DNA tests all around.
DNA tests. You get a DNA test and you get a DNA test.
But that was the thing I wanted to say. My whole point earlier talking about DNA.
Yeah.
If we can prove a serial killer is, you know, this serial killer from the 1970s or 60s by taking a tiny sample from a cup, then if there's ever an identity issue like this in the future,
this should be standard practice.
Oh, right? My God. Just take a DNA test. You're done. And now we can prove everybody is who they say they are.
But Ben,
do you
have any thoughts on, do you think he was treated that way because he was unhoused do you think there were just people who didn't take him seriously from the start because of socioeconomic things? Like, are these the kinds of options that are only going to be available to someone making a claim like this if they seem like they're part of society in a way that is acceptable to the person? I don't know. Like, what broke down? Why didn't that happen, what Matt is proposing?
Absolutely. The serial killer thing is a good comparison, because serial killers who get away for a long time tend to prey on disadvantaged or discriminated groups in society. So this is part of the problem, the fact that this person was unhoused. This doesn't really happen as often to people who are better prepared or have the means to protect themselves. Again, as you said, Noel, this is probably an episode in the future.
You know, it's interesting because we don't know much about what happened between when the two met at the hot dog stand in 1988 and 2019. That's a long time. We know that the real Woods was unhoused in 2019. But what happened? What transpired between 1988 and 2019? And how did he go all of that time without realizing his life had been secretly kind of co-opted by this other person? And is that what led to him becoming unhoused? It's a lot of questions. And then, last thing, I guess another one of my questions was, why isn't there a procedure in place like what Matt is suggesting, where there's instantly DNA test? We don't need to, let's just go ahead and do it. Is it just because there's just no, it hasn't been established like as a standard operating procedure?
Yeah, as we said earlier, the techniques, DNA gathering, did not exist at the time of the original identity theft, and the feedback loop is created by the paperwork, which further reinforces the crime.
Thank you. Yes, I agree with you. And excellent points from both of you. I think we'll put a pin in this one for now, take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with more strange news.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
We have returned. Guys, if it's all right, there are a couple of short stories that I would like to share because I'm not sure how much news they're making out in the West. The first is a solid update, good news in the continuing story of East Palestine, which we covered in an episode in the past. Remember the train derailment?
Absolutely. And you traveled out there, Ben.
That's true, Matt. That's true. Norfolk Southern has agreed to pay $600 million in a class action lawsuit for the train derailment in Ohio. This comes to us by Josh Funk, writing for AP News. Just yesterday, as we record, we're recording April 10th. At first, this sounds like good news, right? Like Norfolk Southern is a huge company. There was a lot of sound and fury about this when it occurred, and everyone sort of took as a given that there would not be serious consequences, I guess, because remember that it sort of faded from the news for a while. We were one of the few groups outside of Ohio that was still talking about outside of Ohio and outside of a courtroom, I should say. Right. We're not in court yet.
Okay. Well, in the houses of everybody who was affected, I'm sure they were talking about it plenty, right?
Yes, that is a great point, Matt. And what you need to know, folks, is that there was a freight train with almost 149 cars that derailed and just riddled the area with toxic chemicals, vinyl chloride in particular. There were mass evacuations of a relatively small town. And much later, still right now in 2024, people are suffering from respiratory problems, unexplained rashes, nosebleeds. And think about that, how scary it is to just have nosebleeds. And you go to a doctor and the doctor says, I can write you a prescription for Kleenex. I don't know if there's a difference between over-the-counter Kleenex.
I want to know. I want to get out. That's what those.
I guarantee you there's one.
There's at least one.
It's medicated. The money's too good. Yeah, the money's
numbs
too good.
You out or something.
It's like quintuple ply or something, right?
Yeah.
So this agreement is something that Norfolk Southern came to on its own. And if the court approves what they're going to do, this is why it may not be all good news, is they're going to wipe out all the class action claims within a 20-mile radius of the derailment. And $600 million is a lot to us. It's not a ton to, it's not a ton to a train company, right? They already spent $1.1 billion in response to this derailment. They have sent like $104 million in direct aid to residents of this town. And they made it, I feel like they kind of made a deal with the U.S. government because the Biden administration never declared it a disaster at all.
Wow.
And it was. It very much was.
I mean, that's hard to believe that it was never declared a disaster.
Unbelievable. we saw the pictures. If that's not a disaster, what is?
Right. Exactly. And this is something, you know, this is, again, just a brief follow-up in our sort of interim cavalcade of strange news. We do hope that the residents of East Palestine and all those affected do get justice. We know, again, if you listen back to our previous episode, we were very careful to say the bad guys here are not the people who are operating the trains. There's still a huge debate right now over whether or not train companies should be required to have a decent amount of staff on a train, which is bizarro land, crazy. I don't really have a segue other than saying, you know, we do keep an eye on stories, folks, and we do want to share the updates when they are substantive. And here's hoping this will lead to, I don't know, greater justice. It just seems weird to basically pay your way out of class action lawsuits, and we'll see whether the courts approve.
Is it just kind of like that's the implication there? Or I guess, I mean, anyone can pay themselves out of a lawsuit by just like, you know, settling. And I guess I've always found that to be a little troubling because it allows people to not be held accountable, especially when there are large corporations whose actions affect not only the people who are part of a class action, but actions moving forward. And it doesn't really ever seem there are any substantive regulatory, consequences outside of just them paying a bunch of money that they really have to burn.
Lobbies and companies often have more money than victims, unfortunately, not just in the U.S., but in the world. There is another national emergency, not in the United States, but this story is so crazy. I just wanted to I wanted to bring it to light because I'm not sure how much attention it's getting in the West. Did you guys hear about the drug crisis in Sierra Leone?
No.
I have not.
All right. Well, apparently there is a huge national panic because people with drug addiction issues have resorted to becoming resurrection men. They are digging up graves to, quote, get high on drugs made from human bones.
Whoa. Yeah. This reminds me of some of that crazy, there were some like really gnarly drugs in Russia, like crocodile and like jankum and things like that, that were made from human excrement or something like that. How does one make drugs out of human bones?
It's a good question. So this goes to, let's start with the context. A little while back, earlier this year, Tommy Trenchard, a journalist for NPR, wrote a good piece, a primer about the drug that was taking over Sierra Leone, which is called Kush with a K. It's a synthetic cannabinoid. It also can contain acetone, tramadol, formalin, and even fentanyl, a couple of nasty, nasty substances all mixed together. And it was a hit because it was very accessible and it was very cheap in comparison to other things. And I think when we name some of those drugs, that sounds like a wallop, right? Like, why would you take all of that at once?
Yeah.
Just want to not feel anything.
Well, I imagine if you took it one time, I'm assuming there's a very specific series of effects that all of those in a concoction would give you, and it would be something you probably chase.
Overall, it appears to be a depressant. This is something, folks, if you live on the West Coast, write in, because we'd love to hear firsthand experiences. You can sometimes see the lean that people have in San Francisco and places like that when they are under the influence of very, very powerful drugs.
I thought you were talking about lean as in the,
like
Oh, sorry, lean, but then
also,
I imagine
lean is also a problem. I'm talking about lean? A physical slump.
Lean is itself, I think the name probably derives from that very thing that you're talking about, because it does make you like have these nods, anything that's got opioid content. And I believe which is what lean is, like a mixture of, I believe, Sprite and like codeine or something along those lines. So
yeah,
you'll,
promethazine,
you'll
maybe
get that lean you're talking about for sure.
Yeah. And so we know that Kush has this depressive effect. It's similar to how sometimes people resort to opioids or heroin, right? To feel a little bit of relief, to feel that float. Kush, however, can have really bad effects on your immune system. You'll get sores. People say their feet will swell, their lower legs will swell. They often get a pounding sensation in their head, pain in their necks and joints. And that's not even getting into the liver, kidney, and respiratory consequences of this. It's tough, right? And a lot of people in Sierra Leone already struggle with poverty, with corruption, all this other stuff. Here is where we get to the very strange, I mean, still heartbreaking, but even weirder, more ghoulish story. If we go to NDTV World, we'll see an article by Bavya Sukeja just from yesterday, April 11th. This psychoactive depressant also, according to the streets, contains parts from human bones. And by this point, it's been around for about 6 years. The drug itself can give you a high that lasts several hours, and they're cutting the drug with human bones. So drug dealers who are running out of the actual Kush supply are putting this into their product. And the thing is, maybe the most heartbreaking thing, this doesn't actually do anything. The human bone ingredient is essentially a placebo.
It's a filler. Yeah. Where are they getting all this from? Are they robbing crematoriums? Like, are they, you said they're like digging this up, or why? But why this versus baby laxative? It doesn't seem very tenable or functional.
Well, you can get the bones for free.
Yes, that's true.
Instead of buying the baby laxative.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. That's once again the banality of evil. It's just that dirt simple, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say it's grave dirt simple. It's again the profit motive involved. And looking into this, you know, oftentimes we know that in the West, stories about countries in the African continent, they have a weird perspective. Sometimes they can feel like fear mongering or condescending. But we looked into this, and it is real. There are very few opportunities or institutions for drug rehab services in this part of the world. And according to the few we could find, like the National Psychiatric Teaching Hospital there in Freetown, they are inundated with Kush users. Like there is money to be made for the drug dealers. And we don't know how far this goes. I mean, what are you going to do? Set up security guards for every graveyard? What's the answer?
Could be a job creator if you wanted to be. If you had the money.
Silver lining. So we don't want to leave you like that. We have enough time for one more, which is a little bit weirder, which I think will be interesting to you guys. You're both parents. What would you do if iHeart came to you and said, hey, we'll give you an extra $30,000 to have another kid?
I would start the process immediately. I would find someone and I would say, do you want a baby in you? No? Okay. Do you want a baby in you?
Bro, do you not recall how, I mean, maybe yours is a little younger, but 15 years of paying for stuff? That $30,000 ain't gonna cover it, man. I'm sorry. I don't think it's
$22,000 for the first one.
Yeah, no. $22,000
for the first one?
I'm good.
No, yeah, I'll take it. I just like being a dad.
Oh, but, yeah. It's great. But
well, yeah, whatever.
I just feel like that's quite the low ball offer, is all I'm saying.
So here's why I'm asking. In some nations, as we know, birth rates are in sharp decline. A lot of what we would call developed nations. Especially in the East Asian sphere, right? Japan, our story here takes place in South Korea. There are South Korean companies, private industry, to be clear, not the government, that are offering their employees up to $75,000 US equivalent to have babies, because the birth rate decline in South Korea is reaching a crisis point.
Okay.
Yeah. One of them's an underwear company.
So how hard is it to become a South Korean citizen?
Oh, it's a game of rock, paper, scissors. Three out of five.
Dang, I guess I wouldn't count either. All right, fine.
So here's the announcement. And this is just one example of one company. On Thursday, a company named Sangbangwol, underwear manufacturer, said, look, if you work for us, we'll give you $22,400 for your first child. We'll give you another $22,400 for a second child. And if you have a third child, we'll give you $30,000. Pulling a lot of this from the Korea Herald. So all told, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a pretty hefty amount of money. But to your point, Noel, children can be expensive, right? Anywhere in the world.
I guess I just don't understand. Okay, so it's about raising the population? Don't we typically want to lower the population?
Well, generally, in some places, yes. But
maybe not lower. I'm not proposing. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, population tends to be out of control in a lot of parts of the world.
Well, we are all economic batteries, right? And ultimately, we are workers, right? Each individual human being, each child becomes a worker, a cog in the economy, which is why countries individually are probably interested in keeping their populations up, which is, I think, what we're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The a decline in birth rate, which again is becoming increasingly common in what we would call developed countries, is an economic danger, especially when you confront things like the cyclical aging of generations, right? The U.S. is going to deal with this problem, as well as a massive amount of people retire. There are fewer children being born. Society is kind of a Ponzi scheme, to be honest. Like, you have to have more people created to maintain the institutions, laws, and mores that sustain the previous or existing population. So,
You got to maintain the military.
You got to maintain the militaries, Matt. And so, in South Korea, this is part of a larger issue. Fewer people are getting married in general, or even co-parenting, because they feel that the environment in which they live is so hyper-competitive, so unwelcoming. Like, they're asking with a lot of validity, have a child in this economy?
Idiocracy.
Idiocracy, exactly. And there was another previous statement. The actual $75,000 per child comes from Booyoung Group, which is a construction firm in Seoul. And pardon our pronunciation here, folks. It appears that they'll give you $70,000 per kid.
That's more like it.
So, you know, if you're done manufacturing underwear, go have kids with the construction firm, right?
I just got a vision. Sorry to take it back to the military, because the construction thing is really interesting. Like, that company specifically wanting babies that in 18 years or whatever can work for them. Just thinking about militaries in the future that will give you money to have a child that and sign a contract that when that child reaches a certain age, he or she signs up for military service or whatever, you know, PMC it is, private military company. And they even as part of the deal, you get certain like gene therapies, right? And drug therapies.
Little
and
super soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. take care of the kid until it's 18. When it's ours. It's a fairy tale level bargain. Very Rumpelstiltskin.
There was a sketch on, I want to say it was Mr. Show in like a later season, where Bob Odenkirk, yeah, it had to have been because it was Odenkirk. He plays like a basketball recruiter, but he's going to like elementary schools and even like kindergartens and stuff. And he's like starting them real young, you know, and he always brings his famous potato soup to give to the parents. Hey, I brought you some potato soup. And he's just talking about watching these little kids on the playground. And yeah, that one right there is going to be a bruiser, you know. sorry, that just made me giggle. But it's what you're describing, Matt, is horrifying and dystopian AF.
and plausible.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially as the future, especially as time wends on. Last point I want to make before we move on. This kind of stuff, some sort of support system is necessary. National fertility rates are a subject of intensive study. If you are, for any entire country tuning in, if you are trying to maintain your population, not grow it, just not have a population collapse, you need a fertility rate of about 2.1. Right now, the national, as of a few years ago, the national fertility rate of South Korea was 0.78. Over time, this can lead to population collapse, which is dangerous. This is a an existential crisis for a country when it dips below a certain point. But the question is, and folks, let us know your thoughts. The question is, how do you fix this stuff? Do you try to give people a lump sum per child? That doesn't seem economically feasible. Do you crack some Faustian bargain? What sort of incentives should there be? Do you increase immigration? Right? let us know. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. ConspiracyIHeartRadio.com, 1-833-STD-WYTK. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. We'll be back with a little bit more strange news.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer?
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Guys, you in for a little heist?
I'm always in for a heist.
All right. We are headed to San Fernando Valley in California, and we're going to the Garda World.
You're going to take the 5? You're going to take the 5 to the 405?
Oh, shoot. I don't know. What would I take? I would take 405. Let's see. Yeah, I would definitely. No, I would get on the 5, I think, probably, and then head straight up to Sylmar. Mm-hmm. To the Garda World.
You're looking at us in that.
Dubbo, what are you doing?
We're in Carl.
I'd definitely get off on San Fernando Road, my brother, and take a ride on Roxford Street, because that's where this Garda World cash vault facility is that we are headed to. Yeah. This is one of, if not the largest cash heist ever in Los Angeles, guys. As much as $30 million were stolen on Easter Sunday. Now, when I tell you guys that a hole was punched in this giant concrete stone, if you will, facility, and $30 million of cash was emerged from that hole in the wall on Easter Sunday, that's feeling a little religious, don't you think? A little biblical, a little like, on the third day, this cash emerged. Okay, I'm getting a little weird with it, but
no, I like it.
It's $30 million. There's a 3 in there too. Whatever numerology. Let's do it. Okay, so this was Sunday, March 31st, 2024. This is an overnight heist, and it occurred on that Sunday night, and then it wasn't discovered until the next Monday morning when workers at the facility entered in their facility and opened the vault and found that it was empty. Now, here's why it's crazy, guys. This is Garda World. This is a huge company that handles, I mean, $30 million there alone should let you know that they handle a ton of money, but that was just one vault where the cash was taken from. This is a huge facility that holds all kinds of valuables and cash, and somebody got in there without tripping an alarm that alerted anyone. Like, think about that. Well, that shouldn't be.
They must have lowered themselves down from the ceiling and had those sweet, you know, little smoke things that show where all the laser trip wires are. I mean, I don't. How do you do this outside of a Mission Impossible?
Do we know the step by steps, Matt? Or do we know the investigators?
We don't know the step by steps. We know, well, we believe, at least according to some people, you know, it's that whole like a person was quoted that was familiar with the investigation, right, but was unable to say anything publicly. So you can't name who they are. But allegedly, according to the information we have, this facility was entered from the ceiling, from the roof, and they did kind of maybe what you're talking about, Noel, lowered down into the vault. And then there was another hole that was discovered by a local chopper that was going around for news and looking at it. There's a hole on the side of the facility that it is currently unknown if it had anything to do with the heist.
Did you see what a, sorry, I don't want to be tough on the people here unfairly, but did you see that kind of slapdash job of fixing the hole on the ground? Yeah.
It put some plyboard on that sucker and then like shoved it in with some 2x4s.
It looks like my drunk uncle just said, well, I'm not paying somebody to fix this hole.
Well, it's an active investigation with the FBI involved and the LAPD. So I'm assuming they're not really worried about anybody coming back into the vault.
Like all of my drunk uncle's yard work.
The FBI, the LAPD is there.
So this is insane. I think we were all reading about this separately. First off, check out our earlier Brain Stuff episode on why you should never rob a bank. You will not get as much money as you think.
Unless you get $30 million. This is
Hollywood, and it's not a bank. This is Hollywood level heisting. Part of why, Matt, I would imagine, I was talking with some folks about this, I would imagine that part of the reason there is not more detail yet is because everybody who works for this institution is getting looked into pretty diligently.
Oh my gosh. The first comment I wrote in my notes here was, it's a terrible time to be an employee of the Garda World 100%. Cash Vault in Sylmar, California.
Yeah. Imagine the scrutiny, turning people's lives upside down, probably.
Oh yeah. There are so few individuals that would have known exactly how much money or even remotely how much money was in that vault at that time, because this Garda World facility
They offer cash vault services, which generally means, you can go to their website, by the way, cash.garda.com to read all about their services.
Get it?
And this is money that flows in and out of this facility, right? This is for companies often that have to keep cash on hand to operate, banks that have to have a bunch of money on hand to operate, all kinds of organizations that will have, you know, let's say a couple, maybe $100,000 at your local bank's branch. So this facility has a bunch of cash at times, but not all the time.
Right.
And somebody knew when it was going to be in that vault overnight.
And they knew the staffing cycles too.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. They knew staffing cycles and they knew how to get in through the roof. Mm-hmm. Is somebody had access to LIDAR, I guess, if it wasn't an inside job, somebody like saw through the facility or got a hold of a blueprint Hollywood style and made this thing happen.
To do it. Yeah.
You just don't break. Look, with a facility like this, you don't improvise. You don't just break in. You know, these guys were not, and it was more than one person. They were not just driving by and said, "Hey, man, when's the last time we did something fun and spontaneous?
It'll be a good group activity. Can I be the bag man?"
Oh, yeah. Everyone is saying that it was some kind of sophisticated crew. Ocean's 11 style, if you will. There were probably individual intros for each of the characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a montage. There were several twists. Also, if you're a fan of sketch comedy, this reminds me of a group called Chris and Jack. I say a group. It's these two guys, Chris and Jack. Doing amazing sketch comedy. I think they're going to blow up pretty soon. They have this run of heist sketches, Matt, that you would love. I'm going to send some to the group after this. But yes, I'm picturing a cartoonish level agglomeration of heist. I hope that they got people who are each part of the crew because of one specific speciality. You know what I mean? I want the one guy who's like, "Man, I don't know a lot about heist, but I've worked in roofing for, 50 years.
You're the perfect man for the job. Come on in. All right, Freddie, let's go. One of the craziest things here, guys, there was a single alarm that was tripped in the facility when they entered in the way they did. That alarm, though, was not connected up to reach the LAPD or the local sheriff's office or, the county police the way most do. When you get an alarm system in your house, like if, let's say, you use Simply Safe, which is an organization that has sponsored us before, if you have that system active in your home, you're not required to, I guess, but it is highly encouraged to connect that system up directly to your local police department so that if that alarm goes off, they're immediately alerted. You don't even have to be there, and they will send somebody out to your house to like check up, make sure everything's okay.
Because otherwise, it's reduced to like a neighborhood alert or
or your
an
phone.
Audible disincentive.
Well, you might get an alert on your phone that says, "Hey, someone's broken into your house. Congratulations, it finally happened." But
Garda World doesn't answer their emails or check their text on Easter, right?
Well, yeah. But it makes me think again when you're talking about an inside job kind of thing. I don't know if you could maybe disconnect that specific alarm from that, that larger system.
Well, tough. But if you have some sort of hacking capabilities and are able to infiltrate the system, I bet you there would be some way you could do it by rerouting something within the software. You know, I'm just kind of talking out loud. Usually when they do it in movies, somebody snips something, outside, usually in like a breaker box kind of or a panel or something. But as far as like we've talked about the dangers of being in a smart home situation where everything is internet connected, because if it's connected to the internet, then people can access it as well. So I just got to wonder if there's a way of doing that virtually.
Like this is, okay, if I understand this correctly, Matt, this is right now the largest full cash heist, right, in the history of Los Angeles, which is saying something because there have been other folks who held that record before. But
yes, 1997, $18.9 million from another armored cash facility, this time a Dunbar armored facility.
The question is, at this point, it's pretty likely that someone's going to get caught or at least implicated in this. Because even to the point about
using system admin privileges to like reroute something or snipping a cable seems easier or seems smarter because I feel like if you are working at the if you're working in IT or any software affiliated thing, you just lost a month of work. You're going to be hanging out with the LAPD for a while.
Yeah, it's a messy situation there. So our hearts go out to all of the Garda World cash employees there in Silmar, all the ones who were not involved in the cash heist. But there's a whole other thing in here I wanted to talk about, but we don't have to. It was something that I think we mentioned at least to ourselves. I don't think we ever put it on mic, but there was a heist of a truck. No, we did talk about it. The heist of a truck that was carrying a bunch of jewels. Do you remember we talked about this?
From the gem show? Yes. Wasn't it from a gem show?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. And they were knocked like a it truck over stop? While the guys were going in to take a leak at a truck stop, which did kind of make it feel like a crime of opportunity as opposed to this one that you're talking about today.
But you guys, when is the last time we did something spontaneous and fun? that's my favorite. I want a heartwarming heist. Also, there were no injuries. None that we know of. There were no fatalities.
But that one occurred a while back, you guys, I think 2022, and that case is still open. Nobody's been charged. Nothing has been found. It's just like, oh, well, I guess that $100 million worth of jewels is gone now. Mm. But in this case, there's still, you know, it's only been, what, 10 or 11 days since this heist, as the day we're recording on Wednesday, April 10th. Right. So who knows? But I guess weirdly, like, nice work, guys, because you pulled it off so far.
That there were no known injuries or fatalities.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody got hurt. Right. And then the insurance companies get involved, I guess.
Which is weird because there's a story we didn't get to. I had learned recently that there is a growing trend of private insurance companies using drones to keep an eye on like property values and assessments and stuff. So maybe the insurance companies will be left holding the bag on this one, right? Yeah. They have to pay the piper here.
Yeah. Well, have you guys noticed the Aflac drones? Have you seen the Aflac drones yet?
No.
The ones that follow your car as they like fly above your car as you're driving like on the highway?
Like the duck?
Yes. Yeah, the insurance companies will follow your car to ensure that you are driving safely and maintaining correct speed and all this stuff.
Is that like, do you pay extra for that?
Guys, hey, everyone listening, I'm just kidding. That is not true.
I really believed you.
Now, if you are such a jerk. If you don't look closely enough, you can mistake them for birds because those Aflac drones do have feathers on them.
They look like ducks.
They look a lot like ducks. And look, we're not ornithologists, but some stuff is just true.
I'm quite the contrary. I am whatever the opposite of an ornithologist is, that's what I am.
We got to get in front of the email here. Yes, there have been experiments that are true where people are taking dead bird bodies and using them as drones. Jesus. They're putting drone technology. Who are these people? That is true.
Oh, birds and their, you know, realness. It's been an age old thing.
Give me a bird anytime over a the synesthesia pokes out, man. Anytime over a truckload of jewels, count me out for that one. I'll do the keyboard stuff for that one. But you know,
I think you should be. Hey guys, have we done a full cicadas episode? I know we did 3301, but did we do a full episode on cicadas?
We have not. Cicada 3301 is it was an online cryptic kind of possibly AR game.
Yeah.
We talked in 2021, I think, about another brood of cicadas. And just recently, there was something making the news in a sad, hilarious way.
You talking about those horny undead mofos?
Yeah, hypersexual, quote, zombie cicadas. I don't think we have time to really unpack this. This is why I'm saying I kind of want to just talk about hypersexual zombie cicadas for a full 45 minutes with y'all, but just because I think it would be fun.
Sure.
But you know, I guess let's just put this out there. You can find articles on this right now. CBS News's Caitlin O'Kane wrote about this specifically on April 5th. And it's talking about these weird STD fungus laden cicadas that are going to be emerging as part of these two major broods Brood 19 and Brood 13. Mm-hmm. They're coming out in like the Southeast here in Georgia. And then I think the other one is coming out in like a bit north from here. But these are two massive broods of cicadas that come out every 13 or 17 years. And unfortunately, when they go into the ground, they burrow down there for all that time, 13 or 17 years, they get infected with this fungus. And it's on the back, like the sexual parts of, mm-hmm. of the cicadas. And it basically takes off a piece of their body. And then a plug, what is called a fungal plug, emerges. This white looking, nasty, mushroom like thing comes out. Mm-hmm. And this fungus has amphetamines that get released into the cicada system, which make it. I guess according to this article, it says it gives them stamina, which, you know, we're not talking sexually here. It just means they're excited about life in a weird way.
It does make them hypersexual. Oh, though. I mean, that's the reason they're getting up in the first place. Massapapora cicadina, I think it's called.
Yes, Massapapora cicadina.
Mm-hmm. Which already sounds Succadina. Like a dumb party.
Yeah. Cicadina, baby. But yeah, Massospora?
Massospora, cicadina. Yeah. Shout out to Miles Jack over on Daily Zeitgeist. Miles hit me to this. The last time these two broods emerged at once, it was the year of the Louisiana Purchase. So this is like a big deal, like a total eclipse of the sun, but it's like a fungus. But I don't know, man. It's going to be weird. We live in Georgia. So
yeah.
Should we stay inside or what do you think?
Well, so the cicadas emerging is one thing on its own, right? And right. That is one like, oh my God, it's going to be loud. These things can hurt your hearing. They are so loud, which is already horrifying. And they're going to be in your backyard if you live in the Southeast and a lot of them.
Just banging.
Yeah, because they're going to, it is mating times. They come out, they emerge to mate, and then they go back in the earth and they hang out for a while. They come back and they just get it on again. But with this STD-like fungus, it's STD-like because it's spread in the same way because they don't actually have sexual organs anymore if they are infected. So right. They cannot mate, but they rub the fungal plugs, what once were their mating bits, on each other. And it spreads the fungus, and now more and more of them have it. It is really, it's messed up too. It makes the males that are infected do the mating rituals that the females do in order to get other males to come down and again, just rub up against the fungus. So it is like, it reminds me of some of these mind controlling other funguses that we've talked about in the past. Like
the Last of Us, man. Exactly. That's what Last of Us Zombies were based on.
But like, it's really creepy. The scariest thing is something that has not been proven yet, but is a possibility in the same way when we talked about the zombie deer disease pretty recently on the show. It is not zoonotic. It has not jumped from cicada to other things
yet.
Specifically humans, not jumped to us yet. But there are a ton of other species of various shapes and sizes and forms that eat these cicadas, like as a, oh my gosh, it is buffet time, y'all, let's eat cicadas, look how many there are. They are going to be ingesting this fungus, and it is unknown how it is going to affect certain species.
We could say it's a non-zero chance, technically. Yes. True. But that's always the risk with so fungus is amazing. You've heard our previous episodes on it. Humans still have a lot to learn about fungus, and the question of whether this thing probably will not traverse the zoonotic gap just because it is so specifically adapted to the cicada. Yeah. However, there's always a chance.
Oh, agreed. This whole concept of spending 13 or 17 years underground in the soil is what I think you're talking about. So specific to that life cycle of being underground, dormant, away from basically everything but the soil and the biological material of that cicada. I don't think it won't work well on a creature that's in the sunlight, you know, most of the time. All right. Well, hey, that's all I have, guys.
Yeah. If you are a cicada hearing this, let
check
us know.
Check your back end.
How's your butt? Yeah, let us know. Check your butts. And we also want to know, your reaction to these heist stories. Unfortunately, speaking of a heist, a lot of people have encountered identity theft in some way. Last but not least, please don't dig up people to use their bodies in drugs.
For the love of God.
I think we're agreed on at least that, folks.
And don't steal people's identities and ruin their lives just for yucks. It's a jerk move.
Or for profit. You know what I mean? It's okay to be yourself is what we're saying. And we can't wait to hear from you folks. Join us. Give us leads for new episodes in the future. Join the show every week where we do a listener mail program. How can I find you? You might be asking. Well, unlike the people who pulled an amazing heist in Los Angeles, we try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us in the Hamlet Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on YouTube, where our video content exists, rolling out every single week. Where's George Washington going this week? Find out soon. We got another one coming that might be, I think, one of my favorites. You can also find us in the Hamlet Conspiracy Stuff show on Facebook and on X, FKA Twitter. On Instagram and TikTok, we're Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, do you have a phone and like to make calls with it? You can also do it with VoIP, I guess, if you had a laptop or something. Call 1-833-STDWYTK. This is our voicemail system. You will hear Ben's voice and some music that might be familiar. Then you get 3 minutes, say whatever you'd like. When you're done with those 3 minutes, it hangs up. You can call back if you want. We do prefer that you leave one message at a time, if that's okay. If you've got more to say that could fit in there, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email?
We are conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal starting on May 23rd on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.